Brandon Pertner. Welcome into the game in Tuscaloosa. I hope you're doing well.
I am doing well, and good evening to you, gentlemen.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, when we can talk college football with a guy that is as passionate about it as we are, we love it. And I know you guys at Phil Steele Publications, you guys love college football, and so do we, and it makes it a perfect marriage.
Absolutely. It's college football, not 24/7 year-round. I mean, let's face it, there is no off-season when it comes to the SEC and college football as a whole. You go from the season to recruiting to spring practice, and it's magazine season, it's the summer, before you know it, it's fall camp, and you're right back into the season. Can't wait, less than 6 weeks away now.
Yes, it is, 38 days. We've been counting it down, Brandon. I know this is probably odd about Tuscaloosa, but we've been counting it 2:30 out.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, Dan, especially looking for redemption from how that season finished last year with two straight losses. I know Alabama looking forward for a little bit of redemption in 2014, and I kind of expect them to get a little bit of redemption, especially early. I would not want to be a West Virginia supporter in that opening game in Atlanta.
I want to drift away from Tuscaloosa, but I want to end the conversation talking about Alabama. So let's go out west as far as we can go from Tuscaloosa. Let's talk about the Pac-12 for a couple of minutes. Give me a couple teams that you feel like that could be a part of these four teams that will be competing for the new trophy, the college football playoffs, in 2014. Who are they?
Well, first I'll say the Pac-12 as a whole, I think, has made a move towards being the clear number two toughest conference in the country compared to the SEC. I'll give you two teams out there, although I do think on the whole there's probably five or six top 30 caliber teams, but two teams I think are top five, maybe top 10 caliber. And I'll start off with Oregon, who's been up there the last 4 or 5 years. Marcus Mariota's back. They got Ifeanyi Olumu at cornerback back, one of the best cornerbacks in the entire country, one of the best centers in the country coming back. I would say that was probably the three biggest recruits that they could get, getting all three of those guys to not declare for the NFL and come back. You look at their schedule, they do have an opening game against Michigan State in week number two. As far as non-conference goes, they could be a little tricky. But I would say outside of an away game at UCLA, they're going to be favored in each and every one of their games. This is a program that's won at least 11 games each of the last 4 years. I think Oregon, especially with Marcus Mariota back at quarterback, it's got to be a team that you've got to consider as playoff consideration for 2014. Now, the other team is that team that they play on the road, and it's the UCLA Bruins. You look at this, with 17 returning starters, they are the most experienced team, not only in the Pac-12, but of any BCF conference team. UCLA welcoming back Brett Hundley at quarterback, Miles Jack, who played both ways, notably at running back and at linebacker. I think he's All-American caliber at the linebacker spot. Jim Moore has done a great job. They're coming off of 10 wins. And they do have a tough schedule, including a non-conference game against Texas. But the key thing for UCLA this year, they get Oregon, USC, and Stanford all at home. They can take care of business at home. They can be another contender as far as making the 14 college playoffs.
Brandon, is there any threat from what the Pac-12 is able to accomplish there to the SEC of not taking over that number two spot, but pushing the SEC for that number one spot?
No, because let's face it. I mean, seven straight national championships. I know it came to an end last year, but they almost pulled it off and got eight straight. They got a lot of work to do as far as winning a national. They haven't done so since 2004 when USC won one. No, and not quite yet, but as far as being balanced, yeah, I do think they have six or seven teams that are top 30 caliber. They have legitimately had two top 10 programs each of the last 4 years in Stanford and Oregon. The reason I don't have Stanford up there this year is the fact that they probably had the toughest road schedule of any team in the country. But with UCLA coming on, and we'll see if Steve Sarkisian can get USC up there to where they were under Pete Carroll, then I would say that they'd be able to give the SEC a run for their money.
Let's work our way back west, and let me just compliment you guys on the Phil Steele magazine. This magazine that you guys sent me, I will carry this throughout the football season. I've got it right here. I mean, I don't do a radio show without it. Tomorrow night, I'm going to New York City. I'm leaving tomorrow morning. I've got to do my radio show in New York. This is going in the suitcase because it's a media guide. That's what it is, and it's right now on the newsstands throughout West Alabama. Brandon Pertner right now. Brandon Pertner helping me out, college football analyst. Let's work our way to the Big 12 for a couple of minutes. Give me the contenders there.
Well, I think you got to look at two, and I'll start off with the defending Big 12 champs, and that's the Baylor Bears. And when you welcome back Bryce Petty, who threw for 4,200 yards accounted for 46 touchdowns last year. And I think they have one of the most underrated coaches in all of college football, and Art Briles, who's done absolute wonders at that university. And they seemingly, you know, overachieved expectations each of the last 4 years. Just when you think Baylor, you know, they're a one-season wonder under RG3. They have Nick Florence at quarterback, and then last year with Bryce Petty, they go 11-2 and have one of the best seasons in school history. They only have 10 returning starters, but Petty at quarterback is one of them. Goodley at wide receivers, one of the best wide receivers in the country. They got some talent at running back in Shaq Linwood. A couple of their guys, main guys back are on the offensive line. They took some major steps last year defensively. Art Briles has said this is the best defensive line he's had since he's been at Baylor. You look at their schedule, they're going to be double-digit favorites in probably 10 of their 12 games, with the exception of road trips to Texas and Oklahoma. And they hammered both of those teams last year. They beat Texas 30-10. They beat Oklahoma 41-12. So this is a quite formidable team that I think is top 10 caliber and definitely a consideration for the playoff. The other team would be the Oklahoma Sooners. I know down there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you're very familiar with them and what they have as far as talent on the field after beating Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. They roll into this season coming off 11 wins. They got 14 returning starters. Trevor Knight at quarterback took some major games, especially in the bowl game. That they get, you know, outside of him at the skill position, there are some questions there, but they've done a good job of recruiting. Offensive line is quite experienced. But the big thing, and I think Oklahoma makes a step towards being elite again, is on the defensive side of the ball. 9 returning starters. I think they have an All-American candidate at each and every one of the level of the defense. If they live up to expectations and you look at their schedule, they're going to be favored in all 12 of their games. Oklahoma is definitely not only a team that's a favorite in the Big 12, but I got to put them among a clear favorite in making the first ever college football playoff.
Brendan, as we continue this conversation, I look at the Big 12 for a couple of minutes. What are going to hurt their chances? Because they don't play a conference championship. Is that going to come down? I mean, when we get in the selection committee, these 13 members that select, and, you know, to be honest with you, I'd put Phil Steele there. I wish he would have got an invitation and said, hey, let's put him there, because I think he would have been a great job of, you know, taking the numbers that he crunches, put him in that room and say, give me the 4 best teams in college football. You look at the Big 12, what are going to be the hurdles for that conference getting in this college football playoff?
Well, I mean, I'll say this on their behalf. I mean, they do play 9 conference games. So, I mean, they are playing each and every one of their members in their conference. And they're also playing, a lot of the key games are on that weekend of the conference championships. I mean, the Bedlam series, Oklahoma State, which is usually featured 2 top 15 caliber teams, is getting played on that December 6th. You know, Kansas State with Bill Fenner welcoming back a lot of returning experience. They're going to play Baylor on that December 6th. So I think a lot of those key games are going to be played on the same weekend. So I don't think they're necessarily at a disadvantage. I'll say this. I mean, they're going to have, if they're going to get in the college football playoff, they're going to have a team that goes undefeated, in my opinion. It's not going to be like the SEC or maybe even the Pac-12, where a team can probably afford to lose one game and still possibly make it in. They're going to have to go undefeated, but as far as, you know, being at a disadvantage, no, I would say in some regard, a conference championship game could actually be a disadvantage in playing. I mean, for instance, say Alabama's 12-0 and they lose an SEC championship game, and then there's 3 or 4 other undefeated teams out there. I mean, that could be a disadvantage in playing an extra game.
Brendan Pertner, right now, let's move to the Big Ten. There's some question marks around that conference. Is it one team? Is it 2 teams? Is it more than that? That will be a true competitor for the new college football playoffs.
I think it's just 2, and it's the 2 teams that played for the Big Ten championship last year. And I'll start it off with Ohio State, who lost that game last year to Michigan State. They welcome back Braxton Miller, and more importantly, in my opinion, the number 2 coach in the country outside of Nick Saban, and that's Urban Meyer. As long as he's on the sidelines, they're going to be a contender. You look at outside of Braxton Miller on the offensive side of the ball, there are some concerns as far as the offensive line being relatively inexperienced, but the advantage for them is they get to practice against what we rated as the number 1 defensive line in all of college football. 2 All-American candidates on the inside and outside, and Michael Bennett and Joey Bosa. Noah Spence, who is suspended the first couple of games, but is an All-American candidate. So that offensive line gets to go up against the number 1 defensive line in the country. So, you know, the games could actually be easier for them. You look at their schedule, they're going to be favored in 11 or 12 games, with the exception of the Michigan State game that does come on the road on November the 8th. But with 12 returning starters, they're 24-0 in the regular season under Urban Meyer. I think they got a solid shot of making that 36-0 in the regular season. On the flip side, Michigan State, at 13-1 season. Mark D'Antonio is one of the more underrated coaches in the country. Got Connor Cook back at quarterback. You got Jeremy Langford back at running back. The question for them is they got to replace three All-Americans on the defensive side of the ball, led by Denard, the Thorpointer, at cornerback last year. But they got Pat Narduzzi, their famous defensive coordinator, back. Looking at their schedule, here's the thing that I think holds back Michigan State: an early road trip at Oregon, where I think they're going to be about a two-touchdown underdog. Now, if they come out of that one with an upset win, and they maybe match up favorably against Oregon, the fact that they're a team that is built at the line of scrimmage, and Oregon's had trouble with that in the last couple of years, they win that one, then they get Michigan, Ohio State, and Nebraska all at home. Take care of business there, they could be a team that's in the playoff consideration when it's all said and done.
I'm not really sure what to discuss as far as the ACC. I'm sure it's just Florida State. Anybody else?
Yeah, it's Florida State and clearly anybody else. They got probably three, four teams that are top 20, top 25 caliber in North Carolina and Clemson, but it's Florida State, and it's Florida State by a large margin. I would rate the Seminoles as at least a two-touchdown favorite over anybody in the ACC.
I'm going back to the SEC to end up, and I look at Jacob Coker. We call him Jacob. Alabama's going to change his name to Jake Coker. He's listed at the number one quarterback spot at Alabama. He's the transfer from Florida State arriving here. It's a big battle, Blake Sims, Jacob Coker. But I'm just sort of curious, when you guys are projecting success, how do you evaluate transfer quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, it's obviously a little difficult because you try to think back and where has there been, you know, a very successful transfer quarterback. But I'll say this, I don't think there's been a transfer like Jake Coker, who almost beat out the Heisman Trophy winner last year for that starting job at Florida State. And the fact that he's going to be surrounded by the best skill position talent in the country, led by either the running back core with T.J. Yeldon and Derrick Henry, and then the best wide receiver in all of college football, and Amari Cooper, and a very deep wide receiver core, and has one of the nation's best tight ends, too, in O.J. Howard, a decent offensive line. So he's got a lot to work with there as far as being in transfer. I know he doesn't show up on campus till this summer, but, man, I mean, it's easy to predict success. And let's just look at it. Everybody's worried about an inexperienced quarterback. Well, last year's national championship winning quarterback didn't have any experience coming into the season in Jameis Winston. You look at, you know, Everett Golson in Notre Dame led them to a national championship game appearance in 2012, being a redshirt freshman. A.J. McCarron wasn't officially named the starter until game number two in 2011. He was right there fighting in a battle with Phillip Sims. Neither one of those guys had experience. So I don't think the inexperienced quarterback is that much of a big deal in college football. At least that's the trend lately.
And you start adding those skill positions. I just want to make sure I heard you correct. You said Alabama has the best skill position guys in the country.
Well, number one set of running back core in the country. I know Georgia's, if there's a Georgia fan listening, they might have to, you know, something to say about that. But I think Alabama's deeper, better, and healthier than what Georgia is. T.J. Yeldon, Derrick Henry, best 1-2 punch, and it's hard to go against. You know, Amari Cooper is the best wide receiver in college football as long as he's got somebody throwing to him. You saw in the spring practice with Lane Kiffin's new offense. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that he wouldn't easily surpass what he did as a freshman getting 1,000 yards. So he could be in for a Biletnikoff-type season. And you look at his offense coordinator, Lane Kiffin, he's used to having a Biletnikoff-type wide receiver. Marquise Lee, who won the Biletnikoff a couple years ago when Lane Kiffin was head coach. So, yeah, when you add the two together, yeah, I think they have the best skill position talent of anybody in the country outside of the quarterback spot. I'm just speaking significantly of the running back and wide receiver core.
Brandon Pertner right now from Phil Steele Publication, editor there of the magazine, assistant editor of the magazine. I'm not going to push you too much, but let me just stay in the SEC West. Who's the challenger? Who's the team that's going to push Alabama? Is it LSU? Is it Auburn? Is it Texas A&M? Give me one of those three teams.
Yeah,
you could pick Arkansas now, Brandon. I said eliminate Arkansas. Or Mississippi or Ole Miss.
Yeah.
But
I'll say this. I think you got to beware of the Mississippi schools this year. Ole Miss and Mississippi State, they're probably the two most experienced teams coming back in the SEC, and they've had a little bit of success, and they've at least been competitive. At least Mississippi State was competitive with Alabama last year. But, no, I think without a doubt it's the Auburn Tigers. The thing that about Auburn this year, I think they're actually a better team than what they were a year ago. But the fact that they face a top five toughest schedule at Kansas State, then playing at Mississippi State, got to go at Georgia, at Alabama. It's a very tough road schedule, and I think that's probably the thing that holds them back, plus the fact that they were so fortunate in about two or three games last year that really helped them out towards the end. So I think Auburn's probably a 10-win team and probably the biggest candidate to possibly unseat Alabama, but when it's all said and done, I think it's Roll Tide in the SEC West.
All right, so can Auburn... They may be better, they may be a better team, and I think Phil goes back to this and says, but their schedule is such a bear. Give me your thoughts on Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, 14 returning starters. It's the first time that their head coach, Gus Malzahn, whether he's been a coordinator and a head coach at the college level, it's the first time he's had a second year returning quarterback. I know there's a suspension possibly. I just don't see him being suspended an extended period of time. And Nick Marshall, you look at the wide receiver spots, it is the best that they've had in a long time, Sammy Coates, and one of the best JUCO players coming in, Williams. I know they lose Trey Mason, but I think they're still deep there with the Artist Payne. They got Rock coming in from this freshman class. Offensive line is one of the better offensive lines in the country, so I think it's one of the best offenses. Defense is where they got to improve. Six returning starters there. You know, there's some questions about the health of Carl Lawson, the defensive end. I think they'll be a little bit better on the defense side of the ball, but on the whole, you look at their schedule, and I already mentioned it, at Kansas State, at Mississippi State, at Mississippi, who I think is top 20 caliber. They got to play South Carolina from the SEC East, along with a road trip at Georgia, at Alabama in the finale. Yeah, this could be a 2-3 loss season, and they could be actually a better football team than what they were a year ago.
Brandon, I look up at the clock, and I've only asked you for a certain allotment of time. I apologize. Looks like we're not going to be able to get to the SEC East, and if we do, it's going to be just a couple of seconds. Looking at the SEC East, who do you like over there and why?
South Carolina and Georgia are the two favorites. South Carolina does host Georgia, but South Carolina, on the whole, has a tougher schedule. They got to go at Auburn. I'll take the Georgia Bulldogs to win the SEC East.